to Wisconsin Public Television's live coverage of the 2013 biennial state budget address from the Wisconsin State Capitol in Madison. In a few moments, Governor Scott Walker will make his way into the Assembly chambers. He will address the full legislature and his cabinet. Good evening. I'm Frederica Freiberg from Wisconsin Public Television.
And I'm Sean Johnson from Wisconsin Public Radio. We're about to hear Governor Scott Walker's second state budget address. For the past couple weeks, Governor Walker has been previewing his plans to transform education, restructure health care programs like Badger Care, and put more money into roads. Tonight, he presents the full budget to the state legislature and the people of Wisconsin.
The next couple of months will be filled with debate over the budget, spring elections for Wisconsin Supreme Court, and the state school superintendent. For total coverage, go to wisconsinvote.org, where you can always get the latest information on our continuing team coverage on Wisconsin politics.
And tonight, the focus is on the governor and his budget numbers. And unlike a couple of years ago, you've learned a lot about the budget for the last couple of weeks in advance of the address. We've got a pretty good idea of what some of the big picture items are going to feature. And one of those, in particular, education, sure to cause a lot of stir as we debate this budget over the next several months, especially the amount the governor spends on public schools and the way he would expand voucher schools.
In fact, the DPI superintendent, Tony Evers, had said already, even ahead of this budget being formally released and announced, that he is deeply disappointed and saddened by that education budget. Not just because of the amount of money that goes toward K-12, but again, because of that expansion statewide of the school choice program. But the other big kind of headline here tonight, which has also already been released, not right down to the specifics of the numbers, but the income tax cuts for people in Wisconsin, and the governor focusing on kind of the middle class taxpayer.
Yeah, you knew for a while that the governor wanted to have some kind of an income tax cut. Just what that tax cut's going to look like will become more clear tonight, who it applies to, and, you know, how the state's going to pay for it.
And also, we know that the other big kind of drivers of this budget, transportation, and some things are happening there that you're keen on.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is something, another one of the governor's priorities. He said he wants to spend more on roads, feels like it drives the economy, and so the question has been, how are you going to do that? We know, kind of broad strokes from what the governor has already released, that he's going to do it in part through more bonding, going to do it in part through taking money that would go to the general fund for things like schools and health care, putting that toward transportation, and then the question of how you pay off those bonds could get interesting if the state starts to sell assets like power plants to do that.
Another thing that we've already heard of ahead of tonight's budget address, that's selling off potentially of power plants. Now, then, of course, there's also the Medicaid budget, a huge driver of expenditures in the state of Wisconsin, and the governor expects to make some changes there as well.
Yeah, the governor has talked about restructuring the state's Badger Care program really in a way that the state hasn't seen since it was expanded about 14 years ago under former Governor Tommy Thompson. You know, there would be a number of parents who are on the program now with incomes above the federal poverty level that would be pushed out of Badger Care, childless adults who are not covered right now that would be let in, and then everyone who's not covered under Badger Care would be pushed onto these federal health care exchanges. Quite a few people. It's, you know, the exchanges are something that the governor's been critical of in the past, but it's something he relies on extensively for health care coverage in his budget.
And yet we still don't know what those health care exchanges look like, so these numbers clearly are in flux as we go forward, and we, of course, expect to get more detail on that as well. The other thing that I know you think is of note is kind of how this budget goes forward and then represents actually a structural deficit.
And, you know, we'll see if the governor alludes to this tonight, but this is something that's sort of been a feather in his cap the past couple years, is that for the first time in a long time, he's advanced a budget in the last biennium, or in the one that we're in right now, that got rid of that structural deficit. It's something they've been proud of. But as you go forward and you have to pay for ongoing expenses like health care and schools, you want to pay for expenses like a tax cut it becomes more difficult to, you know, maintain that.
What a difference 2 years makes, though, because 2 years ago we were sitting here talking about the big, big changes in collective bargaining for state employees because the governor had proposed that just ahead of giving his budget address, and there were huge protests. Nothing like that here tonight.
No, we were still in the thick of it a couple years ago. There were a big drum pounding away outside, protesters out there. There was some question about how that standoff over what we now know as Act 10 was ever going to be resolved. And, the governor ended up pushing off his budget address, is given in the afternoon. Very strange circumstances. A lot different this time around. More mundane in a way. And really, a lot of the details have already been put out there by the governor, perhaps to make it so, perhaps to make it more of a routine experience.
Does that seem unusual to you at all that we did get so many of the prongs, apparently, of this budget before he's even presented it?
It's something that he said in relation to the way that he presented the budget repair bill, that he made a mistake by not getting it out there more ahead of time or selling the public. So it could be a way to address that with this budget going forward. But I think you always also have to remember with this budget, as with any budget, the devil's in the details. Only after tonight will we have the full budget in front of us, and we'll start to be able to digest what's in there. And, we've heard a number of the things that the... There you heard the Assembly Sergeant-at-Arms introduce Governor Scott Walker to the joint session of the Wisconsin State Legislature. The governor now going down the middle of the aisle, shaking hands with lawmakers. Shaking hands there with Democratic Representative Brett Halsey, wearing a bow tie tonight. Representative Halsey, one of the governor's most outspoken critics, you could probably say.
Although Brett Halsey seemed to have a big smile on his face.
He did. That's, it's funny when you get these people in a room together for situations like these, they can manage to be friendly for a few minutes. Wait about a half hour, though.
And, yes, exactly.
Once the speech is over.
In fact, the minority Democrats will have comments following this speech. We will not be carrying those live as part of this broadcast, but we will be hearing from UW-Milwaukee Professor of Governmental Affairs Mordecai Lee to give us his impressions of the governor's budget address tonight.
We were mentioning before the governor walked in there that, again, the devil's in the details with any budget, no matter who's governor. And while we have, kind of a broad outline of where the governor's going, that big, huge budget bill is yet to be introduced and yet to be broken down by budget analysts. So we will await that in the weeks to come.
It does appear that with a little more applause, the governor will proceed with his biennial budget address.
Thank you. Our friend, the governor of the state of Wisconsin, the Honorable Scott Walker.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Speaker Voss, Speaker Pro Tem Cramer, President Ellis, Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Minority Leader Larson, Minority Leader Barca, members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, constitutional officers, tribal leaders, members of the cabinet, distinguished guests, members of the Wisconsin legislature, and most importantly, fellow citizens of the great state of Wisconsin. It is an honor to appear before you tonight. Before we get started, I would like to introduce the First Lady of the great state of Wisconsin, my wife, Tonette. Sitting next to Tonette is the Major, is Major General Don Dunbar, the Adjutant General of the great state of Wisconsin. General Dunbar, thank you to you and all the men and women of the Wisconsin National Guard. And sitting next to General Dunbar is Sergeant Luis Cortez Avila, who just returned home from 11 months of being deployed with the 1157, I'll get that right, Luis, 1157 Transportation Company out of Oshkosh. Now wait, there's more. Like the other soldiers in his unit, he performed his mission well and returned home safely. But one thing was extra special for Sergeant Cortez Avila. On November 2nd, a date I remember because it's my birthday, thousands of miles away from his home in Oshkosh, Luis became an American citizen. With the help of his platoon, and he reminded me again tonight to make sure I thank them, the help of his platoon who would quiz him as they would go to and from the motor pool, Sergeant Cortez Avila passed his citizenship exam and took his oath of office while serving in Afghanistan. Congratulations again. Recently, Sergeant Cortez Avila told me that when he was a baby, his family moved to California from Mexico. Later, when he was 11, his family moved to Wisconsin. Sergeant Cortez Avila mentioned how much his parents gave up for him and his brothers so they could have the freedoms citizens have here. They wanted their kids to grow up having a choice to do what they wanted to do in life. His parents made incredible sacrifices so their children could live the American dream. Now their son, Luis, is an American citizen and a proud veteran. We salute you. Tonight, I want to share with each of you our ambitious plans to help more people live the American dream right here in Wisconsin. Our focus is simple: more prosperity, better performance, and true independence. Going into this budget, we face a much different set of circumstances than we did 2 years ago. At the start of 2011, Wisconsin faced a $3.6 billion budget deficit, and the unemployment rate was 7.8%. At the time, I stated that moderation and frugality in government would lead to freedom and prosperity for our people. 2 years later, and Wisconsin has a budget surplus, and our unemployment rate is down to 6.6%. It wasn't easy, but we're turning Wisconsin around. This allows us to invest in our priorities. Priorities I've talked about in every corner of our state over the past few months: creating jobs, developing the workforce, transforming education, reforming government, and investing in our infrastructure. This evening, I will share with you how our budget will help bring more prosperity to the people of Wisconsin, how we'll improve the performance of our needed government services, and how we'll push reforms that help people transition from government dependence to true independence. Bottom line, I want more freedom and prosperity for all. Improving the economy is my number one priority. For the past 2 years, we lowered our overall tax burden. We streamlined the regulatory process so what we do enforce is about common sense and not about government red tape. We put limits on lawsuit abuse that in the past was a hurdle for small businesses and farmers. These positive changes to our business climate are part of the reason why 93% of the businesses surveyed by the statewide chamber now say Wisconsin is headed in the right direction, versus just 10% who thought the same thing in 2010. Chief Executive Magazine moved Wisconsin up from 41 to number 20 on the list of best states to do business in. And Site Selection Magazine recently moved us up to number 13. We're turning things around. We're heading in the right direction. We're moving Wisconsin forward. To keep this positive momentum going, we need to do more. One of the best ways to grow our economy is to put more money back into the hands of the people and small businesses of this state. With this in mind, I am pleased to announce an income tax cut of $343 million. You, the hardworking taxpayers of this state, helped to create the budget surplus. So it's only right that we put more money back into your hands. Over the next decade, this will lower income taxes by some $1.7 billion. We reversed the trend in Wisconsin in the last budget, and we lowered the overall tax burden. Now we're lowering taxes on middle-class taxpayers by specifically reducing the rates for the middle and bottom three tax brackets. This will ensure a tax cut for everyone, with the focus on making sure Wisconsin is more competitive for middle-class taxpayers and small businesses. This will truly stimulate the economy. Think about it. More money in the hands of taxpayers will likely drive greater demand for goods and services, which will likely lead to greater production and eventually more hiring of employees. Overall, this would lead to more jobs for the people of Wisconsin. Our middle-class tax cut is a down payment on my goal of reducing the tax burden in our state every year I'm in office. I want to cut taxes over and over and over again until we're leading the country in economic recovery. In addition to driving down individual income taxes, our budget will hold the line on property taxes. In the decade prior to my taking office, property taxes went up 27%. In contrast, in each of the past 2 years, property taxes on a median-valued home actually went down. Keeping property taxes affordable is important for working families and seniors all across Wisconsin. In December, I received a wonderful card that sums up why this is so important to people from all across the state. I have it right here. It reads, "Dear Governor Walker, I'm a resident of Brown Deer and just received my property tax bill, and it went down," and he underlined down. "Seeing that Brown Deer won't thank you, I will. Nobody will give you any credit for that, but we do, and we back you with everything you do. You are for the state and great. Lord bless you and yours. Signed, Edward Zellhofer." Well, thank you for the card, Mr. Zellhofer. You'll be happy to know that this state budget continues to put a focus on property tax relief. You see, higher taxes would slow our improving economy. With this in mind, this budget does not, I repeat, does not include a gas tax increase or a vehicle registration fee bump. Overall, our budget includes more than $630 million in tax cuts. Let me repeat that. Our budget includes more than $630 million in tax cuts. In addition to helping the middle class, our tax cuts support small businesses and key Wisconsin industries like manufacturing and agriculture. Combined, family of four with mom and dad making about $40,000 each would save $272 from the income and property tax relief in our budget. For the next decade, that family stands to save even more. In fact, more than $1,000 in income taxes alone. Our tough but prudent decisions 2 years ago put us in a position to further reduce the tax burden of our citizens while still investing in our priorities. Compare that to the tax increases enacted and proposed in our neighboring states, and the folks in Washington, D.C. provide an even starker contrast to our positive results. Now, to tell the Wisconsin success story, our budget includes significant resources to market our improving business climate. We did the same thing in our last budget with new resources for tourism marketing. Tourism had a $16 billion impact on our state's economy this past year, and it was up 8% from the previous year. In this budget, we continue that support and expand our efforts to attract international visitors and to increase the number of meetings and conventions in Wisconsin. As much as we love attracting new employers and visitors to our state, we really need to focus on helping start new businesses here in Wisconsin. Our budget expands the Capital Catalyst program we just kicked off in Eau Claire and recently in Whitewater. This program helps new entrepreneurs take that first big step. Two of those entrepreneurs are here tonight. Andrew Heft is a student at the University of Wisconsin, Whitewater, who created a new company called Date Check Pro, which helps grocery stores track the expiration date on merchandise. He got the idea after working at Festival Foods in Onalaska. Good to see you. Along with him is Joe Newman. He has a new company called Got Apps, Inc. that is working with companies like Daycheck Pro to design apps that will increase their productivity. Now get this, Joe came to Whitewater from Illinois because he was impressed with the entrepreneurial spirit in the community. Thank you for being here as well and for being in Wisconsin. Our investments in this program will assist even more entrepreneurs like Andrew and Joe. And to help even more startup and emerging businesses, our budget includes $25 million for an investment capital program. I put the money in the budget. Now I ask the members of this legislature to work together to pass a bill on the framework for this program prior to the passage of the budget. This is another way for us to help promote prosperity here in Wisconsin. As we work to create more jobs, we need people with the skills to fill the jobs. Our budget includes nearly $100 million in new state support for workforce development. We include resources for grants for employers, support for apprenticeships, programs for veterans, funds for our technical colleges, and University of Wisconsin system. We understand that the state which is able to fix the job skill gap is the state that will lead the country in economic development. We want Wisconsin to be that leader. Our plans put the focus on key skill clusters in areas like manufacturing, information technology, and healthcare. Tonight, I want to introduce James Burrow, who is a graduate of the Veterans in Piping program. Thank you for being here. Now, the Veterans in Piping program is a partnership that provides service members and returning veterans with the training necessary to become certified apprentices in the pipe fitting trades. This is one of the many fine programs we support in this budget. In addition, I want to introduce Molly Day, Philip Mercer, Jessica Novak, and Ed Dunbar. As you might guess from the lab coats, these are UW medical students involved in the Wisconsin Academy of Rural Medicine. Our budget expands this program, as well as helping the Medical College of Wisconsin establish sites in Green Bay and Wausau to increase the number of healthcare professionals in the workforce and to improve access to quality healthcare in rural parts of Wisconsin. In addition to healthcare, agriculture is obviously vitally important to rural communities all across the state, where farming is more than just a business, it's a way of life. Our budget includes incentives for those in agriculture to make improvements in technology. We also include resources to make sure the World Dairy Expo remains strong in our state. Plus, we move forward with our support for the Center for Dairy Research at Babcock Hall Dairy Lab on the University of Wisconsin campus. Helping agriculture grow helps the state's economy grow. Another important link to economic growth is a healthy intermodal transportation system. Last year, Wisconsin exports were up 4.7% compared to 4.5% nationally. Much of the increase in international trade went through our major ports in places like Green Bay, Superior, and Milwaukee. This evening, we're joined by Green Bay Port Director Dean Hain. Dean, thanks for being here. Overall, we make a $6.4 billion investment in our transportation infrastructure in this budget, a budget that supports roads, bridges, buses, freight rail, airports, and yes, ports. A good transportation system is good for jobs. Recently, I stood with Terry McGowan and union workers at Local 139. He represents 9,000 members who know the importance of building and maintaining a strong infrastructure system. Terry, thanks for being here. In addition to these jobs, a strong transportation system is an important part of keeping and growing jobs in other industries too. Farmers, manufacturers, loggers, miners, and so many others need a way to efficiently and effectively get product to and from market. That point was made again to me last week as I spoke with workers at Seneca Foods in Baraboo. A couple of them are joining us tonight. Please welcome Paul Palmdy and Aaron Gerard, who are here as well. Last year, I visited with them and other employees at their company as they explained how the rail line in their backyard is so vitally important to them and many of the other employers in their county. Our budget includes new support for improving freight rail. We also include resources to improve access to high-speed internet connections in our state. This is an issue I hear about in rural and underserved parts of our state often. In a global economy, we can compete with anyone, as long as we have the technology. Our investment helps build that gap, bridge that gap. Overall, our budget improves the prosperity of our citizens by helping employers create jobs, developing our workforce, and investing in our infrastructure. Now let's share how our budget will help improve performance. Tonight, I want to tell you about some of our top-performing public schools in the state. As of the most recent report card, 709 schools in this state exceed or significantly exceed expectations. There are schools like Roosevelt Elementary in Janesville, Bluffview Middle School in Prairie du Chien, Morgan Elementary in Beloit, Jefferson Elementary in Richland, Howe Elementary in Wisconsin Rapids, Longfellow Elementary in West Dallas, Grant Elementary in Sheboygan, Grayside Elementary in Mauston, and Al Berman Elementary in Baraboo. Majority of the students at each of these schools are economically disadvantaged, and yet they're high performers. There are plenty of other schools that exceed or significantly exceed expectations as well. Schools like Franklin Elementary here in Madison, Clayton Elementary in Neenah, Hewitt Texas Elementary in Wausau, Maple Grove Elementary in Merrill, Holton Elementary in Hudson, McLaughlin Elementary in Green Bay, Lincoln Elementary in Wauwatosa, Fremont Elementary in Fremont, and Pleasant View Elementary in Wild Rose. High-performing schools like these are schools that show dramatic improvement in their scores. And in this budget, they'll get performance incentives. We want to recognize and reward excellence and then replicate it in other places around the state. Now, under our proposal, the schools have to earn the performance incentive each year. Under the current report card, schools would get an average of $30,000 each. They can use the funds for things like rewarding exceptional teachers. While we're on the topic, let me also say thank you to all the amazing teachers from across the state. Having two sons who went through the Wauwatosa public school system, Tonette and I can really appreciate the hard work and dedication of so many wonderful teachers who had a positive impact on their lives. I know many other parents across the state feel the same way. Now, thankfully, there are many excellent schools in our state. In addition to recognizing our many great public schools, I want to introduce you to some students, parents, and leaders from St. Marcus and Notre Dame schools. These schools are in the voucher program. Both are located in areas of high unemployment, and both far outperform their Milwaukee public school counterparts on reading and math. At Notre Dame and All-Girls School, Middle School on Milwaukee's South Side, college is the goal. 98% of the middle school graduates complete high school, and 82% go on to college. St. Marcus Lutheran School served nearly 700 students on Milwaukee's north side. The results showed that both schools do at least 50% better than NPS schools in reading and in math. Thank you for being here. Now, these are just a few of the young people who are performing well in our public, charter, choice, virtual, and homeschool environments all across the state. We applaud these high achievers. Overall, I put $475 million in new state funds into our schools and higher education system in this budget. For the first time, a significant portion of that is based on performance. In addition to rewarding high-performing and rapid-growth schools, we also put new resources into helping turn around schools that are failing to meet expectations. These schools will receive additional funds once they prove they have a plan to fundamentally improve their schools. We should not pour more money into institutions that are failing to meet expectations if they continue down the same path. We should demand a corrective action plan to fundamentally improve the education of our children. Our goal is to get every school to be a high-performing or rapid-growth school. For communities where some schools fail to meet expectations, we include an expansion of the parental choice program in this budget. Since wealthy families have a choice because they can pay to send their children to a private school, we give low-income and middle-class families an opportunity to also choose a viable alternative for their sons and daughters. Interestingly, some communities have both high-performing schools as well as some that fail to meet expectations. Green Bay is a good example. Keller Elementary in Green Bay is a school where more than 70% of the students are economically disadvantaged. Yet Keller Elementary exceeds expectations. In this budget, schools like this will be eligible for a performance reward. At the same time, in that same district, there are other schools that fail to meet expectations. Other districts like Madison, Beloit, Sheboygan, and West Dallas, West Milwaukee have similar situations. Our budget plan rewards high-performing schools like Keller Elementary in Green Bay. At the same time, our budget gives financial assistance to turn around schools that fail to meet expectations. Now, while we work to improve underperforming schools, our children can't afford to wait. This is why we provide new choices for parents in areas where schools are failing to meet expectations. In the end, our goal is simple. Ensure that every child, regardless of where they're from or what their family income is, every child has access to a great education. In this budget, we also include new funding for reading screeners to help prepare our young students, a new partnership for improving reading and math skills through the Boys and Girls Club, and additional support for Teach for America staff. We tap multiple sources to improve educational performance. Working with Dr. Tony Evers and the State Department of Public Instruction, we include resources for educator effectiveness and new professional tools for our teachers. We support ACT testing for all of our students. Goes beyond just the college bound, and we fund academic and career assessments to help students prepare for their future place in the workforce. In higher education, we provide additional funding for our technical colleges and give their board the tools to move towards a performance-based system. We want them to work towards matching students with the skills needed to fill the jobs of today, and more importantly, tomorrow. We give more resources to the University of Wisconsin, and we give them the flexibility to use those resources wisely. Plus, the new UOW Flex option will open the door to more affordable options in higher education. We continue our support for financial aid to students in our many fine public and private colleges and universities here in Wisconsin. Now, in addition to education, we include changes to improve performance in other areas, too. Working with Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, I included new resources to fight internet crimes against children, to improve GPS monitoring of people on restraining orders in domestic violence cases, and to expand the number of DNA samples we collect to solve and to prevent crimes. The provisions in our budget, Wisconsin will expand the number of samples in the DNA database by more than 50,000 in the first year. I want to thank State Senator Sheila Harsdorf for her steadfast work on this program. I particularly want to thank Gene and Kevin Zimmerman of Marshfield. In 2008, their daughter Brittany was killed here in Madison. The Zimmermans have been vigilant in their fight to find her killer and to expand the use of DNA. Their hard work will not only help families like theirs, but will ultimately help prevent other families from having to go through what they went through. Gene and Kevin, thank you so much for being here tonight and for all of your hard work. Even though much of the attention on health-related subjects is focused on the federal government, we make some significant investments to improve performance in our state. Our support in this budget for the Wisconsin Health Information Organization will help create a more transparent system for all of us as healthcare consumers. More objective and clear information will allow us to better manage our health and wellness, and not just our healthcare costs. We improve our ability to treat and cure cancer by our support of the UW-Carbon Cancer Center. They will create a new Wisconsin Oncology Network of Imaging and Excellence to share their cutting-edge work with healthcare providers all across the state. The problems of domestic violence and child abuse affect families all across the nation and, sadly, here in Wisconsin as well. Our budget invests in a first-of-its-kind Family Justice Center. It's connected directly with a Child Advocacy Center. The center will provide shelter and care for victims of domestic violence, as well as a coordinating center for child abuse prevention efforts across the state. More than the convenience of having all the different services in one place is the importance of protecting victims from their abusers. Survivor of domestic violence at the Soldier and Her Family Peace Center reminded me of that during a recent visit. Victims need a safe place to go. Our budget supports shelters in Milwaukee and Madison, as well as services all across the state. And if people are going to perform well in our state, they should be able to improve their mental health as well as their physical health. Nationally, serious mental illness costs at least $193 billion a year in lost earnings. In Wisconsin, only half of all the adults with serious psychological distress receive mental health treatment or medication. With this in mind, our budget includes the largest commitment to mental health services in 30 years. This investment in community-based services will increase the independence of people living with mental health needs and maximize their ability to be contributing members of our state. Our investments are focused on improving in performance in Wisconsin. Now, I'll share with you how our budget will reform state government. I dare say that I don't think any of us grew up with the dream that someday we'd be dependent on the government. It almost seems foreign to the American dream. But sadly, it seems that some folks in Washington measure success in government by how many people are dependent on the government. In contrast, I measure success by just the opposite, by how many people are no longer dependent on the government. No, we're not talking about pushing people out into the streets. Instead, we're talking about empowering people to control their own destiny with a job in the private sector where they can pursue their dreams. This is what truly leads to freedom and prosperity. It's why our budget is built on a plan to reform a broken system and transition people from government dependence to true independence. A major part of the plan is what we do with Medicaid and how it relates to the federal health care mandate. Specifically, our actions allow us to reduce the number of uninsured in our state by 224,580. We also reduce the net number of people who are on government-run Medicaid. Some 87,000 people living above poverty will transition into the private or exchange market, where they can get a premium for as low as $19 per month. At the same time, we're able to add 82,000 people currently living in poverty. Many of these individuals were not covered by Medicaid in the past because of a cap put on the program by the previous governor. Going forward, everyone living in poverty will be covered under Medicaid. This also prevents putting the state at risk of the federal government not being able to fulfill the enormous new financial obligation under the Affordable Care Act. You see, of the current $644 million cost just to continue Medicaid in Wisconsin today, about 39% of it comes from changes made by the federal government. If they cannot fulfill their current obligations, what makes us think the Congress and the administration can cover even bigger costs in the future when they're sitting on a $16.5 trillion debt? Our budget proposes to reform entitlements in other ways, too. Like most states, Wisconsin sought a waiver in the past from requiring job training to people on food stamps. Only a few have taken advantage of the voluntary program. One of them is named Elizabeth from Milwaukee. Last spring, she completed the Smart Path program and got into the Milwaukee Area Technical College. While there, she completed the Certified Nursing Assistance program and got a job as a CNA. Now she's working to become a nurse. In fact, I think she's actually doing it tonight. Alan's another example. He started in the program last year and got help preparing for a job. Today, he has a full-time job with benefits. Alan is employed as a welder at a steel company in Milwaukee. My budget changes the food stamp program so that non-elderly, able-bodied adults will be required to be enrolled in employment training to receive food stamps. More than 75,000 people will benefit from getting extra help with job skills. Now, I'm all for providing a temporary hand up, but for those who are able-bodied, it should not be a permanent handout. I care for the people of this state too much to force them to live a life of dependence on the government. I want those who are able to be prepared so they're ready to fill a job when one is found so they can have the same type of success that Elizabeth and Alan have had with our program. These reforms will help transition people from government dependence to true independence. You see, there's a reason we celebrate the 4th of July instead of April 15th. It's because we celebrate our independence as free men and women and not our dependence on the government. Our reforms move people to true independence. This is the American dream, and our budget shows it is alive and well in Wisconsin. Our ancestors came to this country to embrace it. We work hard each and every day so our children can live it still today. Many generations ago, my family came from Ireland, Wales, Scotland, and Germany to live this dream. Tonette's family came from Italy. And just a generation ago, my brother's in-laws came from Mexico. Each came to live the dream of more freedom and prosperity for future generations. This is the same dream that Sergeant Cortez Avila's parents envisioned when they came to America. Now their son is an American citizen and a proud veteran of these United States. Our budget puts in place reforms and performance measures to ensure that his and future generations have access to even more freedom and more prosperity for years to come. So tonight, I ask for your help. Tonight, I ask the members of this legislature to review, improve, and then pass this budget. Working together, we can continue to move Wisconsin forward. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you here tonight.
And so, Governor Scott Walker concludes his second biennial budget address, talking about jobs, education, transportation. There will be a lot to discuss and analyze in the weeks ahead.
And tonight we've asked Mordecai Lee, a professor of governmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, to join us for his first impressions of what the governor said tonight. Mordecai, what jumped out at you?
I think we heard two speeches tonight. One, we heard a speech to moderate Wisconsinites. In other words, reasonable government, reasonable tax cuts, reasonable activities. But we also heard a speech to the Republican base nationally when he said, I don't believe in dependency, when he said the Independence Day is not April 15th. This is the beginning of his effort really to run for re-election in the short term and then be a national candidate in the longer term.
Do you think this speech, this address, and that philosophy maintains Wisconsin at kind of the vanguard of this conservative movement?
There's no doubt that, for example, the expansion of school choice is going to be a national story, because we have to understand that what Republican ideology now is, conservative ideology is, that it's not that they believe in public education, they believe in publicly funded public education. In other words, not all kids should be going to public schools, but all kids should have their education paid for.
Mordecai, there are some numbers that we did hear tonight's speech and some that we didn't. We heard the governor say there's going to be a tax cut of $343 million. Didn't hear that broken down. It would actually be about $2 a week for the average Wisconsinite. Heard him talking about balance of the budget in the last budget. We didn't hear reference to the fact that this creates a structural deficit in the next budget of about $188 million. He made a trade-off there. What's the calculations going on?
Well, Sean, I think you're onto something in the sense that tonight is a policy wonk paradise. People like me love reading budgets, love hearing about budgets, and there are some numbers that one can emphasize and some that one can put place aside. But we have to remember the difference of the context. 2 years ago, there was a structural deficit, and so in a sense, his budget was an emergency effort to balance the budget. What we're seeing today is a budget with policy initiatives that reflect what conservatives believe in. And in fact, the voters of Wisconsin decided that they wanted a Republican governor and a Republican legislature. And so this is a policy document that reflects the Republican philosophy of government in the sense of cutting taxes and cutting the size of government. This is on a state level compared to the federal level.
Is this kind of a job-creating budget, though? The governor says that this, as Sean referred to it, as a $2 a week tax cut, says that that will drive greater demand for goods and services.
Frederica, the dirty little secret of public finance is that state governments can't affect the economy. Only the federal government and the Federal Reserve can affect the economy. But nonetheless, it reflects Republican conservative ideology that you hold down taxes as much as possible, you cut taxes. Now, when I was in the legislature, I went through two tax cuts, the Dreyfus tax cut and the Tommy Thompson tax cut, when times were good. And then a couple years later, times were bad. So sometimes tax cuts in the long run don't necessarily reflect good long-term planning. But I think what the debate is going to be about the tax cuts, getting to Sean's statistic, is who benefits from the tax cut? Do people who only get an earned income tax credit, do they benefit from a tax cut? Do people who are in the higher incomes, do they get a proportionate tax cut compared to the middle class or a disproportionate? So we're going to be seeing arguments in Madison here in this building that almost echo what we heard in the national capital in Washington.
And from what we know about that tax cut, he is going to cut rates in the middle, but that would affect people who earn, you know, in the millions. Is that a message that he can sell? I mean, everybody's going to get something. It looks like everybody above that level of the earned income tax credit is going to get something. But that includes millionaires, too.
We have to remember that our income tax is based on what's called progressive taxation. In other words, that the higher a person's income, the higher their ability to pay. And so when there are arguments about having a flat tax, the question becomes if people with higher income should be paying the exact same rate of people with middle incomes. And Sean, I think you put your finger on it. The argument in Madison, probably by the Democrats, by the minority party, is that does a tax cut disproportionately benefit higher income people compared to middle income people?
Going forward, what do you think the most controversial pieces of this budget are?
I think the most controversial is going to be the expansion of school choice. Because in a sense, this is the principle that we don't provide public education through public schools. There's no doubt that what we're seeing is the camel's nose in the tent. First it was only Milwaukee low-income people, then it was Racine. If it's this budget, it'll become statewide to the major cities. This is what conservatives believe in. And this is a different perspective on what the role of government is.
Going forward, we always say that this is a budget that has to go through the legislature now. They're going to make some changes. But, you know, in practice, this is not a legislature that told this governor no very often last session. Do you expect them to say no to any of the stuff that he's outlined here tonight?
I don't expect any major changes. And in fact, when there's a governor from one party and a legislature from the other party, even then, there aren't that many changes to a budget, which is thousands of pages long. But in this case, they agree with him, they support him, they stood with him 2 years ago through real thick, and they're going to stand with him now. So I think there'll be debates around the details, around the borders, but not much else.
All right. Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee, thanks for being our guest tonight.
Thanks, Mordecai. If you would like to see tonight's speech along with Mordecai Lee's insights, you can watch it again by going to WPT.org. Wisconsin Public Television will have it posted later this evening on our website. We'll also have continuing coverage and reaction to Governor Walker's state budget address this Friday night at 7:30 on Here and Now.
Wisconsin Public Radio will also continue to follow developments at the Capitol. You can hear more state budget coverage tomorrow morning on the newscast of Wisconsin Public Radio and more discussion with Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network.
This concludes Wisconsin Public Broadcasting's coverage of the 2013 biennial budget address. I'm Frederica Freiberg with Wisconsin Public Television.
And I'm Sean Johnson with Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. Have a good night.